This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Mr. D Math and More podcast series. This week, we're going to talk about something that my algebra, geometry, algebra 2, even pre-algebra, pre-calculus, students going to college, they always ask over and over and over again. And the question they ask is this, is they always want to know, why in the world would we take the numbers out of math and put letters in their place? It just makes it more difficult. Well, my answer to them when they ask that question is this. I always wonder, why in the world did someone take the letters out of math and put numbers in their place? Math was easier when it was just letters. What? How is that possible? I think math is supposed to be about numbers. But what if the idea, the concept of math isn't about numbers at all? It's actually about relationships, and the relationships are represented by letters that represent concepts or those ideas. Now, I'm going to give you one of those concepts right now. Tests like the SAT and other kinds of tests like that, they come along and they like to ask questions like this, and everyone just gets mad. A rectangle has a perimeter of P. What is the length L of the rectangle if the width is W? Now you're thinking to yourself, now how am I supposed to answer that? A rectangle has a perimeter of P. What is the length L of the rectangle if the width is W? What? Well, guess what? In about 10 minutes, we're going to come back to that same problem, and you're going to be able to solve it with no problem at all. If you're thinking there's no way, hang with me and let's go. Let's check it out. Yeah, it sounds crazy. Math is supposed to be about numbers, not letters. But the truth is that sometimes and often it's the calculations that give students a hard time and not the concept. They're so busy trying to figure out what the calculation is that they miss the concept. You know, in a high school or college math class, when we introduce a new concept, we always introduce it with the formula first. Y equals mx plus b, pi r squared, and so on and so on. We always introduce it first with letters, and then we go back and put the numbers in to show specific examples. The problem is that we don't do that with our young people. In fact, it's the other way around. We teach them to do it with the numbers first and then say, oh, let's do some algebra now. Let's take out the numbers and let's put some letters in. And young people look at mom and they think, why are you doing that to me? What does math have to do with letters? Young people get confused, moms get confused, moms get frustrated, young people get frustrated. Dinner time becomes no fun if the word math comes up when you're talking about how your day went. You may have a question right now. Well, what am I supposed to do? Because everything I see in my math courses all starts with the numbers. Well, that's a great question, but I'm here to answer that question for you. That's why you've tuned in this week. So let's start with something easy. Are you ready? And we're going to get back to that problem about perimeter and length L and width W, and you'll be able to do that in no time. Let's start with addition. You know, I tell my students in pre-algebra that the definition of addition is counting things that are the same. And we spend a lot of time having them say 17 plus 7, and you carry, and you move this and do this, and if you go over 10, you put this one up here. We get some specific examples about how to do it. But what does it actually mean? So I tell my students what? Addition is counting things that are the same. Let's say that you looked off and across your table, you wrote down the letter X 3 times. There it is, X, X, X. And then on the other side of the table, there's that same letter X, and now it's written down 5 different times, X, 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 X. And you say to your young person, how many X's are there? And they say, well, hold on, and they count them up, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, I've got a total of 8. 8 X's. Huh, how about that? They counted X's. You could put coins on the table. You could put teddy bears on the table. You could put whatever you like on the table, but they're counting things that are the same. Then you could put things that are not the same, and they could start to develop the relationship of what we call in algebra called like terms. Why can you count X's, but you can't count teddy bears? Because they're not the same. Oh, wait, it gets better. The conversation about common denominators. All right, well, let's just think about what are we doing? Well, we're counting things. What are we doing? All right, well, let's go back to your table. Write down on one side of the table, 1/5, 1/5. Write it down two different times. There's a 1/5, there's another 1/5. On the other side of the table, write down 1/5 again and say, what do you got? Now, you may have to tell your young person not to think of it as the numbers 1/5, but the thing 1/5. And they look at it and they go, well, there's 1, 2, 3. Three what? Three of those things. What are those things called? 1/5. So what do you call them? Well, you call them 3 1/5 or 3/5. Ooh, you can actually start to have a conversation now about why a common denominator has to be a common denominator. Not that you just have to make the bottom numbers be the same, but the bottom numbers have to be the same so you can count them. How easy is that? What about multiplication? Well, multiplication is just counting things. It's like fancy addition. You get a little more sophisticated in your counting methods, you can start counting things by more than one at a time. Write down the word duck, like a duck. Duck, duck, duck over on one side of the table. Duck, duck, duck in the middle of your table. Duck, duck, duck on the other side of your table. While young people will start out going 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, eventually they'll start counting by threes, 3, 6, 9. They're doing multiplication. A lot of us work with our young people on skip counting. That's all skip counting is. Counting things by more than one at a time. But does it have to always be numbers? No. Have it be ducks. Have it be teddy bears. Have it be popcorn kernels. Whatever you like. So now you might be thinking, well, the examples you just gave us had numbers in them. You had 9 ducks. You had 8 X's. Well, that's true. I just wanted to get you warmed up. You see, algebra, when we start to use algebra, is about problem solving. It's about finding an unknown. Another way to think about it in an equation is it's undoing what is being done to the variable that we're trying to solve for. How do we do that? Well, we use inverse operations to solve an equation. Get ready, we're heading right back into that perimeter problem. It's coming. But think about this, you already know this. Man, I know that you know this, but you do. I know you know it, here it comes. If I say to you, ready, what's the inverse of addition? You would say, fill in the blank, there it is, subtraction. Okay, well then what's the inverse of subtraction? Addition. What's the inverse of multiplication? Division. What's the inverse of division? Multiplication. When you get into higher levels of math, you get to find out things about exponents and how the inverse of an exponent is a root, and on and on and on. It gets even more fun from there. If you saw a problem with add in it, and you wanted to solve the equation because there was a variable or something that you didn't know the answer to, an unknown, how would you use an inverse operation? Well, if you see add, you subtract. If you see subtract, use add. If you see multiply, use divide. If you see divide, use multiply, and so on. Now, does it get more complicated than that? What if there's both? What if there's add and multiply in the same problem? Well, of course, it's gonna get a little more complicated along the way. And we came up with this really cool thing called the order of operations to guide us along the way so we know what to do and when. Some people call the order of operations PEMDAS. Some people call it Please Excuse My Dear Aunt Sally. Maybe you've heard of it that way. And if it gets really complicated, like when they hit that Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, pre-calculus level, well, that's when you reach out to people like me, Mr. D, for support. You say, we're going above my math pay grade now. Would you give us a hand? And I'm happy to do that, of course. So let's take a look at an example. Are you ready? Something that you would know. Check this out. This is what we're used to doing. This is how we teach young people to do it. But we're going to reverse this process very quickly. This is what we tell them. X plus 5 equals 8. You ask them the question, well, what's happening to X, the variable? It's being added by 5. Well, how do you undo that? Well, you subtract by 5. Oh. X plus 5 equals 8. Well, what's happening? If I see X being added by 5, okay, fine, I subtract. Great. X equals 8 minus 5. X equals 3. Now, what's interesting is if I write down X plus 5 equals 8 and I say, find X, the students say, okay, well, it's being added by 5 and I subtract by 5 and they can do that. So we say, solve for X. Students don't hear solve for X. They hear, oh, there's one letter and the rest are numbers, so let's do stuff to the numbers to find out what the letter is. They do the steps. They don't really think about what they're being asked. The question or the problem says, solve for X. When you think about X plus 5 equals 8, what you notice is that's specific. So what if we had this? What if we had X plus Y equals Z? That's way more fun. Now listen to this. x plus y equals z, and I say solve for x. What's happening to x? X plus y equals z. Oh, x is being added by y. All right, well, if it's being added by y, I use my inverse operation, subtract by y, and I have an answer. X equals z minus y. How about that? But here's where it gets really good. Take the same question. X plus y equals z, and now solve for y. What? Solve for y? I'm used to solving for x. Well, let's solve for y this time. X plus y equals z, and you say, okay, well, if I'm solving for y, and all of a sudden now you're thinking about what you're being asked, SAT style question, what's happening to the y? Oh, it's being added by the x. Okay, fine, then y equals the z minus the x. See, can you hear that? Can you see it? Can you get a picture of that in your mind? X plus y equals z. What does y equal? Oh, well, we're going to undo that add by x, subtract by x. So z minus x, that's what y equals. Now, if you notice you get a little lost right now, it may be because you're walking, you're driving, you're doing something with your children. Maybe you're multitasking while you're listening to this podcast. If you can, stop, take a break, write it down. If you can't, come back to it later, write it down so you can see it while I'm saying it at the same time. If you are able to write it down right now, write it down and you'll see how it works. See, the problem I see with young people a lot is if I show them the problem x plus 5 equals 8, it's fine. They know what to do, subtract 5 from both sides, all is good. But as soon as you switch it around and you say 5 plus x equals 8, well, now they're confused. Well, what am I supposed to do now? Why'd the 5 come first? What happened? I don't understand that. The x isn't there anymore. This isn't how I'm used to doing it. Take it back now to x plus y equals z and ask the question, what are you solving for? Is it the x? Is it the y? Is it the z? I already know what z equals. It equals x plus y. Now I know what x equals. It equals z minus y. I know what y equals. It equals z minus x. And you might be thinking to yourself right now, Mr. D, my head is spinning. Quit it. Let's do more. Let's do just the opposite of quit it. Let's take it a little bit further because it'll start to click as we go. You may notice already it is clicking for you. All right, think about this. X times y equals z. Okay, well, let's solve for x now. What's happening to the x? Oh, it's being multiplied by the y. Okay, how do you undo a multiply? Well, the inverse operation, divide. So if x times y equals z, then x must equal what? The z divided by the one that was doing the multiplying, the y. Just like that. Wait, what if it was x times y equals z, and now you have to solve for y? So, same thing. What's happening to y? What's being multiplied by x? Oh, just divide by the x. No problem. So, y equals z divided by x. And it's just that easy. You may have noticed that you just did that in your head and were like, oh my gosh, I could do this. This is great. By the way, if you get stuck, what can you do? Send me an email and just tell me, you were talking about that x times y equals z. Can you send me some more information about that? And I'm happy to do so. Okay, now, you're teaching perimeter to a young person. Remember, we were talking about perimeter a little while ago. Here it is. We tell them to take the sum of all the sides. What are the sides called? Well, it depends on the shape. Let's start off with a rectangle. It's got length and width. That's pretty familiar to everybody. The length is 10, the width is 8. I have to add up all the sides, but there's two of each one. There's two lengths, there's two widths. If I drew a rectangle, I could see there's a 10 and a 10 and an 8 and an 8, and I would add all that up, 10 plus 10 plus 8 plus 8, I would get 36. No big deal, that's fine, and you can do that. But where does that come from, the sum of the sides? Because along comes the, get ready for this list, the SAT or the ACT or the CPT or the PERT, the ASVAB, the ASVAB, the GRE for graduate school, or the GMAT if you're going to get your MBA. It goes on and on. Listen to this. This is what's on the test. A triangle has lengths A, B, and C. What is the length of A if the perimeter is P? I'm going to say that again. What? A triangle has lengths A, B, and C. Those are the lengths of the triangle. One's A, one's B, one's C. What is the length of A if the perimeter is P? The perimeter is what they add it up to. So A plus B plus C is equal to P, the perimeter. All right, well, What's happening to A? Well, think back. A plus B plus C. A is being added by B, and it's being added by C. So how are we going to undo that? We're going to subtract by both of them. So A plus B plus C equals P. If I want to know what A equals, A simply equals the P perimeter minus the B minus the C. And it's done. Well, wait, what if you wanted to know side B? Well, that's fine. A plus B plus C equals P. If I want to know side B, just subtract the A and the C. And all of a sudden, side B equals P minus A minus C. And you can go on and on and on. Okay, well, when I started this podcast, I said to you this. A rectangle has a perimeter of P. What is the length L of the rectangle if the width is W? Now, you might be thinking now, you know, I actually think I can do this now. Let's walk through it. Are you ready? The length L. There's two of them. There's an L and an L. The width W. There's two of them, a W and a W. Well, do you remember when we first started out counting? If I see an L and an L, it's two L's. I just write 2L. The number 2, the letter L, 2 L's. W plus W, that's 2 W's. So the perimeter becomes 2 L's plus 2 W's equals P, the perimeter. Where did I get that from? Well, I got it from the rectangle has a perimeter of P, the letter P, like perimeter. I added up the sides, 2 lengths plus 2 widths equals P, the perimeter. Well, now what's happening to those lengths there, that 2L? Well, there's two of them, okay, but they're being added by something. Oh yeah, when you said add, you subtract. Fine. So the 2 lengths equal the perimeter minus 2 W's. But I got 2 lengths. That's like 2L or 2 times L. Oh, how do you undo multiply? Oh, you divide. So you take that quantity, P minus 2W. I'm going to put some parentheses around it to keep them together. And then I'm going to divide it by the number that was multiplying the L, the 2. And guess what? The length equals that quantity, P minus 2W, divided by 2. And we took a problem that sounded difficult, and we could now go through it step by step and see how it's done. These are called literal equations. And when I first introduced them to my students in pre-algebra, it's one of the hardest things they have to deal with. It's not because it's hard, it's because they've never seen it before. It's so new that they're so used to numbers that we take the numbers out and put letters and they get confused. Instead of, let's start with letters and put the numbers in later. So if you think about why can you do that now? Well, you see the letters are just placeholders for numbers. There's no calculations to do. You just apply the algebra skills that we talked about with inverse operations and you solve the problems. Yay, dinner time is fun. Speaking of fun, let's have a little fun with something that I hear often. What does pi equal? Now, not your apple pie or cherry pie. I mean the math pie, just the two-letter one, pi. What does pi equal? And most people say, well, it equals 3.14. Now, my 12-year-old son sang me a song he learned when he was 10, and he took pi out, oh my goodness, I think it was 40 or 50 decimal places. It was super cool that he could do that, but did it answer my question? What does pi equal? Well, he said 3.14159, and after that, I got lost. You see, no matter what numbers you use, all you're going to get for pi is an approximation of what pi is. You're not going to actually get pi. So then what does pi equal? Let's take the numbers out and let's put some letters in and see what happens. Now, we're going to use an example of something you can do at home. All right, get ready. And if you want me to write this up and send it to you, just send me an email and I'll give you how to do this at home as well. Here's the experiment. Take 3 strings, measure each one. By the way, I highly recommend use centimeters. It's way easier to measure centimeters than inches. You can use inches if you like, but I recommend centimeters. Let's take 3 strings, measure one 6 centimeters, make another one 10 centimeters, make another one 12 centimeters. Now take the first string, the 6 centimeter string, and make it into a circle. You're going to take the 10 centimeter string and you're going to make that into a circle, and the 12 centimeter string and make it into a circle. Is your circle going to be exact? No, that's okay. It's an experiment. We're going to discover something. But make it into a circle, and now let's go back to the 6 centimeter circle. Lay another string, a separate string, across the circle that goes through the middle. It's called the diameter. Go from one side of the circle to the other and make sure it goes through the middle. And again, get as close as you can. It doesn't have to be perfect, but measure that distance. And you're going to notice now that centimeters are much easier. If you have the 6-centimeter string, the diameter going from one side to the other is about 1.9 centimeters. Now repeat the exercise with the other two. Take your 10-centimeter circle. You've got your 10-centimeter length string. You've made it into a circle. Find the diameter. Go from one side of the circle to the other, going through the center. That string, the diameter, will be about 3.2 centimeters. If you take the same thing with the 12-centimeter circle, it'll be about 3.8 centimeters. Now you notice I'm saying about. I'm what? I'm approximating. Why? Because when we talk about pi, it's always approximately. You're about to discover something amazing about pi, and you don't have to carry it out to 40 decimal places. I know it out to 5, and we don't even have to carry it out to 5. Check this out. We've got the 6-centimeter circle. It had a diameter of about 1.9. We've got the 10-centimeter circle. It's got a diameter of about 3.2. We've got the 12-centimeter circle, and it's got a diameter of about 3.8. What you'll find out is that each original string, the 6-centimeter, 10-centimeter, and 12-centimeter, each time will be just a little more than 3 times longer than the diameter of the circle when you took that string and put it across the middle. Do you want to check that? Check it out. See what happens. Take your 6 centimeters, and how do you do it? Do it backwards to check it. If I'm saying it's a little more than 3 times longer, well, then you must have to divide to check it. Take 6 and divide it by 1.9. Feel free to use a calculator. It's about 3.15. Take that 10 centimeters that we did. Take 10 divided by the 3.2 that we got for the diameter. It's about 3.13. Take that 12 and divide it by the 3.8, the diameter, and it's about 3.15 again. Now what do you notice? All of those numbers are right around. Each of them started with 3. Each of them started with 0.1, and then they moved around a little bit, 3, 4, 5, 6, somewhere around in there. But I said that each original string will be a little more than 3 times longer than the diameter of the circle that it made. Oh. What's a little more than 3? 3.14. What's a little more than 3? Pi. But now we actually have discovered a formula to work with pi. The formula we actually did was we came up with the formula for circumference, which says this. If we take that number that's a little more than 3 and we multiply it by the distance across the circle, we'll always get how far it is around the circle. The circumference is equal to pi times the diameter. Now you might be saying to yourself, hey, I knew that formula, but I didn't ever put that connection together. The circumference, the distance around the circle, is always going to be a little bit more than 3 pi times the diameter, how far it is across the circle. Oh, here we go. No numbers. Remember, I wanted to know what pi equals. Now you're going to find out. Pi times the diameter is equal to the circumference. So if I want to know what pi is, if pi is being multiplied by the diameter, pi has to be the circumference of the circle divided by the diameter. It's exact. It's not approximate. It's always the distance around the circle divided by the distance across the circle, every time and with every circle. Check it out. Have some fun with that. So the next time you're doing math with your young person, take out the numbers, put in some letters, have some fun, play, see what you discover. And if there's any question you have about anything in this podcast or any of the podcasts that I do each week for you, send me an email, dennis@mrdmath.com. I would love to correspond with you, find out how I can support you, and whatever I can provide, I'll be happy to do that. This is Mr. D from Mr. D Math and More. See you next time. This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.